Hello, podcast listeners. This episode you're about to listen to is from the 2022 Be More Digital Conference. If you like what you hear, why not join us at the 2023 conference? It is going to be held on the 9th of March 2023 at the Novotel London West Hotel. We would just love to see you there. Visit charitydigital.org.uk for more information on all things digital. Enjoy.
So I should start off by introducing everybody. So first of all, on my left, and they're nicely lined up with their photos as well to help her, we have Annie Wilmot. Annie is Head of Digital and Communications at Reading University Students' Union, and she's responsible for driving digital transformation and implementing strategy across the organisation. Next, we have Sophie Hardman. She's the COO at Three-Sided Cube, where she leads development, design and project management teams to ensure that everything runs smoothly and processes are slick, delivering impactful and creative solutions. And finally, we have Helen Stevenson. Helen works for Dot Project, who are a cooperative focused on working with social impact organisations, and her role spans consultancy, strategy, business development and project management. So, welcome. So to start off with, I thought it might be useful and interesting for us to consider, why is now a good time to consider your digital strategy? Start with Helen.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, speaking from my experience of also being a trustee of a charity, I think now is an excellent time to be considering digital strategy. Some of the things that I'm seeing across the sector right now, lots of organisations are actually starting to look at their organisational strategies, whether that's because it's just their natural strategic planning process, or increasingly what we're seeing is organisations really taking a step back after COVID, after that crisis response, and really trying to understand and assess where they are now and where they should be going. So, yeah, I think, you know, aligning your digital strategy to your organisational goals is incredibly important, and it feels like now is absolutely the best time to be doing that.
Thanks. And Sophie?
Yeah, so I would echo all of that. I think in COVID we saw a lot of kind of knee-jerk panic reactions in terms of like, oh God, we've got to get this right and it's got to be now and we don't have time to think about it. So kind of, as the world is hopefully calming down now, kind of taking a step back and looking at what you've implemented. People don't tend to make their best decision making when they're under a load of pressure, so sort of assessing that is really good. And then, without sounding awful, like it's 2022, so you know, if you haven't got a digital strategy in place, you probably kind of need to get on with that pretty quickly. Most people in your organisation or perhaps your beneficiaries are going to be digital natives, so their expectation is going to be that there is a digital strategy, that you're going to have some kind of presence. You can't just sort of vomit onto the internet, so you need to have a strategy in place to make sure that you're doing something that's effective. So.
Yes. And this morning I mentioned this fact that around 40% of charities don't have a digital strategy overall, which is, I mean, it's better than it was, but it's still quite a shockingly large number. But an even larger number are actually reporting that they want a better vision from their board of what digital should mean for them. I guess going to Annie, how should an organisation go about developing that vision?
I'm very fortunate. I was brought into my role. It was created on the senior leadership team because they realised they've not had anyone driving digital stuff there at any point. It's always kind of just gone between different people. And I think it's been really important as part of that, that as a senior leadership team, we all think about how we're delivering digital. That's hard to say. And it has been crucial for us that I have my own strategic goals and my departmental plan, but actually that digital strategy sits within the main strategy. And I think the whole team have to be completely on board with it because you are going to be delivering the overall strategic goals. So there's a huge piece around the kind of culture of a team and how do you ensure that you're working really effectively as a team, I think.
Yeah, I think that's some great points. Helen, what would you add to that?
Yeah, I mean, for us, when we think about strategy, we always say, you know, strategy is a team sport. So absolutely that buy-in from senior leadership is really, really key. I think we've seen a few examples of some charities that we've worked with recently who have created digital strategies because a CEO has locked themselves in a room for a couple of days and written it up, and then tried to socialise that with the organisation. You know, that's just never going to work. A really key thing is about creating that buy-in right across the organisation. That's definitely something organisations should be prioritising over the coming months.
Yeah, good points there. This one for you, Sophie. So what do you view as the most important elements to consider in developing a digital strategy?
So I think it's really important to make sure that you get buy-in from senior stakeholders. So we've seen a few times when we've been working with different organisations, you've got this kind of maverick group of people who want to, you know, make a change and make it all amazing and get digital. And they kind of get so far with the project, but then they haven't got the senior buy-in, whether that's funding or just sort of, you know, endorsement or capacity or whatever it might be, and then it kind of dies on the vine. So getting that senior buy-in is absolutely essential, I think, getting it sort of in from a top down and making sure that you're appealing to, you know, what it is that they kind of value. Yeah. So
can I drill down on that then and ask you, how should you actually go about getting that buy-in?
Yeah, so, well, if you went to the Okta talk earlier, then you'll have seen this summarised much better than I'm about to say. But it's really about finding what that person values. So whichever stakeholder you're appealing to, understand what it is that they're going to think is important. There's no point in going to someone and talking about cost effectiveness if what they're kind of interested in is you know, sort of productivity or whatever it is. So generally there are buckets, and if you speak to the guys at Okta, they have an excellent framework. And you know, but generally it does come down to money or productivity, like generally saving money, sort of raising more funds, and making sure that you're kind of speaking their language and sort of going to them and appealing. And there won't be a one-size-fits-all, so it's really important that you do that. Data as well usually helps, so user testing, speaking to the beneficiaries or your users, depending on sort of who you're appealing to. And just, yeah, making sure that you're kind of giving them a lot of facts and looking at your competitors and things, but data is generally a good way to go.
Yeah, great, thank you. Maybe ask the same question about the critical elements to you, Annie. What do you view them as?
I've been reflecting a lot on this recently because we are implementing a huge amount of strategic change at once because we need to move a lot of digital stuff forward. And I've come into a space quite new where a lot of people have been there for a very long time. I have done things the same way for quite a long time. So there is a lot of learning new stuff, but there's a huge amount of unlearning that needs to happen first in order to be able to unblock and move forward. And I don't think I yet have the answers to how you help people unlearn, but there is something in that they need to realise that the tools you're giving them are going to be more effective than the ones they've currently been using and move to that space where they can actually see the value in them, because there's no point in trying to get everyone to adopt something if they still think what they're currently doing, even if I think it's incredibly clunky, is the best thing. So there is I will always keep coming back to culture and people, and we talk about the digital, there's all those aspects, but actually I think the overall culture of change is a big thing. And as much as people say, oh no, I'm good with change, I like to do change, you need to assume that they probably don't and actually really prepare that whole kind of change piece.
So can I challenge you a little bit more on how would you go about this unlearning? I know it's not easy, but I think it would be really useful to get your thoughts on that a little bit more.
Yeah, I think in some of those conversations where it kind of goes back to, oh, this is the way we used to do it, or, well, someone tried that thing 5 years ago and actually it didn't work, there just needs to be some really open and honest conversations about, okay, the circumstances that were then aren't the circumstances that are now, the people are different. And actually, I think for me, we work with students who are, every 3 years our audience completely changes, and students just change so much in terms of all the insights that we've got about them. So if someone is saying, well, this is what students like, but that's based on a long time ago, actually there is a huge piece of that as well. So I think a lot of that is kind of picking out the insights and the impact of stuff, but I think it is just the conversation and keeping them on board. And then I think probably also picking your kind of change ambassadors, the people who you're like, oh, actually they do get it, and they're going to be able to do that within their team, because the more you can equip the wider team, the more effective that's going to be.
Yeah, I think you make an interesting point there about the beneficiaries and the fact that in the student environment they're changing every 3 years, which makes it particularly challenging to keep on top of them. But I guess more generally, for any charity, we exist in order to make a positive impact
for our beneficiaries. Maybe this is a question for you, Helen. How do you feel that we should go about developing our digital strategy so they are sufficiently focused on the needs of our beneficiaries?
Yeah, I think it's a really great question, and I think it really comes back to your organisational strategy. I'm not sure I've read a single charity strategy that hasn't referenced their beneficiaries and the positive change that they want to make for them. Mm-hmm. So I think really going back to tying your digital strategy to your goals that already do exist will ensure that you do maintain that focus on your beneficiaries. But I think there's so many things that charities can do more in this space as well. I'm always really blown away by the amazing work of a domestic abuse organisation called Chain. And if you look at their organisational strategy as a digital first organisation, they actually crowdsourced that and did that with their community through a really exciting process. So yeah, definitely go and check them out. But don't just think about how you can centre your beneficiaries in your strategy, in your digital strategy. Really think about how can you co-create that strategy with your beneficiaries as well, because ultimately they are the experts. So that's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And maybe go back to you, Annie. How do you actually keep on top of that constant change within the student community to make sure you are always considering their needs?
For us, there are all sorts of spaces who are collecting insights kind of higher education-wise, but actually the thing that I push with my team constantly is they just need to get out and actually have conversations with students. I think, especially when you work in digital, that can feel like your comfort zone, and it can be hard to kind of be like, it's as important to get away and talk to the people who are going to use this stuff. I haven't done it yet, but someone the other day was talking about this kind of, if you wanted to learn more about a space, doing almost like upwards mentoring thing. So if you want to get more diverse opinion, find someone who's going to tell you what it's actually like to be different to you. Or for me, I wanted to find a student actually to do that kind of process.
Good. So I want to look now at the barriers to developing and implementing a digital strategy. So Helen, what do you view as the main barriers?
I think the main barrier to creating that digital strategy is making sure that you have the commitment. We always talk about, you know, making sure there's buy-in, there's senior leadership, but I think it's that commitment for the entire organisation for what it is that you are about to embark on. And what we always say at Dot Project is, if you don't have that commitment, don't take it personally. Mm-hmm. Like, really try and understand why do people not want to start this process now? Is it because there's greater, what are seen to be greater priorities within the organisation? Is it that, you know, there's crises that people feel like they need to respond to? So I think, yeah, not having that commitment up front is a bit of, you're kind of doomed to failure 6 months down the line. Why is nobody behind this project? So I think that's one of the main barriers to creating the strategy. I think one of the other key barriers to implementing it effectively is sometimes charities try to do too much at once, and completely understand that. If you feel like you're perhaps behind in your digital journey, you feel like you really need to accelerate and catch up, and we need to implement this database, we need to do this to our website, and sometimes trying to do too much at once means that you do everything not very effectively. So we always say, you know, go slow if you want to grow.
Yes, so the prioritisation for you is a key element.
Absolutely.
As well as ensuring you've got the organisational commitment. Mm-hmm. And in terms of how you get that commitment, do you have any tips, recommendations for people?
I think it's really kind of comes back to a lot of the points that have been raised about really trying to understand, like, who are your champions within the organisation already. Sometimes that will be members of your board. Your board might have a digital trustee. Please engage them. I say that as the digital trustee for my organisation, where I'm like, give me something to do. So definitely find your champions, but your champions exist all around the organisation. They might not have digital in their job title, but they are incredibly passionate about that. So yeah, find those people. And then, yeah, really try and understand for those naysayers, the people that are perhaps scared of this, really try and understand why, and try and alleviate some of those fears.
And Sophie, do you have any barriers you particularly identify?
I think what you said about commitment is definitely a thing. I think budget as well tends to come into it. So there's always a nervousness around spending donor dollars on something that perhaps is new and might not work and is a bit seen as a bit experimental. So I think that can come into it, especially with the smaller charities. I think obviously, you know, money is kind of tight and you've got to be really careful about where you're spending it, which is totally fair. And digital doesn't always give you an immediate kind of uptick, so you've got to kind of have the patience and understand the process and the rest of it. But I think the commitment thing that you've said is definitely a key, because I think you've got to get the commitment, but you've also got to give the commitment. So a lot of the time when there is fear, when people are like, I don't want to, I've always done it this way, this is great, it's because they're worried about they're not going to get sufficient training, or they're going to lose their job or be replaced by, you know, some snazzy tech or whatever. So giving them that reassurance and taking people on the journey and saying, you know, this is for this reason. Generally, people who work in charities are pretty nice. So they're kind of there for the beneficiaries. If you can kind of frame it as that we're doing this ultimately for the beneficiary, then you're kind of getting them on side and then just sort of treating them as humans and walking them through the process in terms of this is how it's going to impact you is generally an important thing. So giving the commitment is a good way to get the commitment, I would say.
And in terms of that getting the budget, obviously that's fundamental
to
be able to do anything. So what are your tips for people to actually get the budgets they need to deliver a significant strategy?
Yeah, so I would say, again, I mean, I'm coming at it from a sort of product perspective, so we, you know, we do sort of apps and websites and things, but it's a lot of it is user testing, so going out and talking to your beneficiaries and understanding what the problems are. So sometimes the problem that you're trying to solve is for the beneficiary directly, so it's sort of saying this is going to be a thing that is going to help you, getting a load of data on that, and again, like I said earlier, finding the value for whoever it is you're trying to convince. And then sometimes it's within the organisation, so it's like, okay, as a charity, this is going to mean that, you know, Jerry doesn't have to spend 14 hours a week doing his spreadsheets or whatever it is, you know, trying to understand where you can kind of add that value, but sort of really talking to them and numbers, as someone who sits on a board, generally, if you put numbers in front of me, like, that's the thing that's going to convince me. So, but it is, I think it does come back to what I said before about finding what it is, the value that's going to tap into that person.
So one of the things, I think this is a really interesting question for the audience, because we've probably got a broad range of sizes of organisation here. I don't know, maybe we'll do a little poll just to get a sense. Who's from a small or micro charity? Okay, who's from a medium or large? Okay, that's from the majority, and major and super major? Few of them. Okay. In terms of numbers of employees and resources, those different sizes of charities obviously have very different numbers overall. So what do you see as the differences? I'll maybe go to you to start with, Hella. What do you see as the differences in terms of developing that strategy between those different sizes of organisation?
Yeah, so I think regardless of the size of organisation, you may experience some challenges when doing that. I think what we typically see, and I'm using quite broad brushstrokes here, so if I'm generalising, I do apologise, but what we typically tend to see in smaller and medium-sized organisations is they might not have a specific digital team. They might not have been able to invest a lot of money in digital already. Their starting point might be much further back. But what is really helpful for these organizations is they typically tend to have less strict governance structures or lots of governance structures. The organization is smaller, so it's less likely to operate in silos. Whereas what we tend to see for larger organisations, it is the opposite of this. So, right, so they might have a digital team, they might have a product team. Digital might go through a lot of the organisation, but actually digital is not bringing the organisation together necessarily. So we might see silos. We also might see quite cumbersome, quite complex governance structures in terms of approvals, getting things signed off, getting strategies moved forward. So those, yeah, that's kind of some of the kind of challenges that are experienced right across the charitable sector in terms of size.
And how should those different sizes of organisations therefore react to those differences in order to be able to produce effective strategies?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's definitely something about looking within your sector. So actually, I hope today has been like a really good opportunity for organisations to connect with each other and understand kind of what's working for others, what's maybe not working so well. So definitely that peer support within your sector. But I think what's also really important as well is to look outside. So actually, what are people in other sectors doing? What are those in the commercial sector doing that you can maybe look at and kind of copy? An example that I really love is actually all the work that's been done in the government digital service over the last sort of say 10 to 15 years about how they've become digital first without that kind of commercial element. And yeah, I think those are definitely things that charities can do to overcome some of those challenges.
Good. And Sophie, do you have a perspective on this size difference?
Yeah, I think, again, sort of just building on what Helen's saying, that's all I'm doing here, I'm just echoing you. I think there's kind of, you see the inverse of each other. So with the smaller charities, sometimes it's great because you've got people who are super passionate and that's what they want to do. And, you know, they're digital first, they might be a bit younger, they might, you know, sort of be kind of digital natives. But the flip side of that is you do tend to get people that wear a lot of hats. I'm sure people that have come from micro charities can kind of all relate to that. So you've got people that are kind of trying to lead the digital side of it, but they're also in charge of, you know, doing 18,000 other things in any given day. So then it can't be a priority, because obviously if you're dealing with your beneficiaries, they're always going to come first. So digital can kind of be, you know, a sideline, and that just doesn't kind of work, having a strategy on the side. And then with the big sort of organisations, sometimes again capacity is better. You've got teams, you've got dedicated resource, which is great. It's the old kind of oil tanker powerboat thing of, you know, trying to turn the tide on an oil tanker can be quite difficult. You've got a lot more people to convince, a lot more kind of lifers, where it's like, but we've always done it this way, and you've got to go through all of that. Whereas if you've got a small charity, you haven't necessarily got as many sort of people that you've got to kind of convince. But yeah, I think they both have their sort of pros and cons. And again, budget, coming back to that, the bigger charities tend to have a bigger budget. But there's a lot more governance, a lot more sort of reporting and stuff that's needed. So it's kind of pros and cons to me.
Yeah, good. Thanks. I wanted us to spend a little bit of time talking about culture and what the role of culture in enabling both the development and implementation of a digital strategy is. Maybe start with you on this one, Annie.
It's interesting because we're doing a lot of thinking about our culture. We've got quite a new senior leadership team. I think we have, as a students' union, you deliver so many different things. So we have a nightclub, we have an advice service, we have kind of a department that does democracy. So there's lots of different things. So it's quite easy to end up kind of doing siloed working. So for us, it's really important to think about actually what is our overall culture that is going to deliver this strategy. And that is a really challenging thing when you're all doing such different stuff. But our kind of mission is to help students have the best time, which all of those things are doing in a different way. But I think there is you need to be repeating that strategy so much that people are completely sick of it. It needs to be coming through in everything that you're doing, being written, like in a meeting. It needs to be at that point that people just don't want to hear it anymore. But hopefully get to the point where they're like, yeah, I'm totally on board with that's what we're doing. And I think we talked about the senior leadership team thing. It has to come from that level. And I think you need to be equipping every level to be able to talk through that strategy and talk through what your culture is. We're looking at our brand, and I want to make sure that everyone can tell the story of our students' union so that you could approach anyone within the students' union and they'd be able to tell the same thing. We're not there yet, but that is my aim.
Good, thank you. Ask the same question of Helen.
Yeah, so I think we like to make, when we think about kind of culture within organisations and digital, we like to make the distinction between what we call doing digital, so kind of implementing new technologies within organisations, but then being digital, so actually using the processes and the culture and the openness and responsiveness that you tend to see in digital-first organisations. or software houses and use that culture of being digital to really unlock some of the benefits of doing digital. The doing of the digital is much, much easier than the being digital about how you work with each other. I mean, technology has completely changed all relationships kind of across the world. It changes how we communicate, it changes how we collaborate. But being digital means that organizations are actually having that conversation about, well, what does this mean for us as an organization? What does this mean for us as teams? Like, how do we want to be with each other? Like, how do we want to work with each other? What does this mean for our roles? What does this mean for our culture? And so often those conversations aren't had, probably because of lack of time and kind of like lack of capacity, but sometimes just a blind faith that putting in a digital solution will deliver the benefits. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is that as well as the what people do, they also need to consider how they're doing it in order to get the true benefits.
Absolutely.
Can I add something on that?
Yeah, sure.
Something I've discovered a bit in our team, and I think because so many of us are so used to using digital, and probably lots of us here because we've come here because we're kind of passionate about the digital side, we probably assume that people understand the most kind of basic of digital tools. So we use Teams and Outlook, and I just assumed that everyone knew how to do that because that's what we did as a team, and realised the other day that some of my team just didn't even know to open Outlook in the morning to see your emails, which is just... It was a surprise. But I was like, actually, they need some like really kind of practical equipping on how do you organise yourself through Outlook. Mm-hmm. But if we want to have a digital first, which clearly it sounds like we're not, which a digital organisation, but if you want to be doing that well, actually, there might be people who are so scared of even not knowing how to do it that they're not even doing those kind of basic things. So there's almost, you might need to look and take a step back and be like, does everyone know how to use this stuff well? Okay, and then make sure that you can do that before the next.
I think that empathy is absolutely critical because I think it's so, you know, we're a software house and it's so easy for us sometimes. The acronyms that we have are many and, you know, we'll sort of be having a conversation and then kind of just be flying off and you can see the kind of thousand-yard stare from some people and it's, you know, it's not a problem to go through and explain that. But if you assume that everyone's on the same page as you, then you kind of, it can get people quite kind of defensive and especially, you know, if you're in a situation where you perhaps aren't the person that wanted to do digital and you've kind of been asked very kindly to do that because you are a small charity and everyone's got one of the hats and then you're kind of there suddenly championing digital and you don't even know how that's happened to then have someone in a software agency barking acronyms at you is probably very boring and horrible. So I think that empathy is absolutely crucial. Yeah.
Brilliant, thank you. Right, I'm going to open up to the floor now.
Hi. I've come back from 10 years out having my kids, and obviously the world's moved on a lot in that time. And I used to be in quite a senior position in big charities, and I've taken the decision to take a much smaller job now. I'd just love some advice on how I get up to speed with digital. You know, what don't I know? It's the I don't know what I don't know kind of challenge. So how could you help me?
That's a great question. And I think... I'll let all three of you answer. You want to go first, Annie?
Yeah, well, I'm doing a lot of kind of driving digital process and stuff, but my like passion is social media and comms. And I think the main way I learn about that is not in work. It's like using social media just to learn outside of work. And I definitely don't want to be consumed on it when I'm around my kids, but actually it's following accounts where people are sharing tips on how to do stuff. And for me, it's having conversations with people. So just being kind of commenting on stuff and responding to people. Because I think when you start to use the platforms in that way and have a conversation, then you can picture how your audience might be able to interact with you.
Yeah, I would say lean on any kind of digital natives that you know. So people that might be sort of ever so slightly younger. I would also say there's a really amazing women in tech community. So as a working mum myself, like I would, you know, go to LinkedIn, go to those communities and ask them. Talk to developers if you know any, because they won't shut up if you ask them for their opinion. But yeah, just I would say definitely reaching out to other women in tech. I think as soon as you sort of start saying that, your empathy immediately is like, oh my God, I'm also a mum in tech, but let's talk about this. And, you know, I think you'd be surprised at how kind of open the community can be. So just kind of reach out and ask. Yeah, literally.
I think my bit of advice would be like, don't set yourself up for an impossible task. Not like digital and technology is so broad. It changes so quickly that trying to keep up with it on a really broad scale is really, really difficult. Which area of the organisation do you work in, like fundraising or comms or fundraising? Yeah, so I would recommend actually, yeah, just following fundraising things and seeing how other organisations are doing it. Once you feel like you're up to speed, then maybe, yeah, start to like look at comms, but take it on a for want of a better word, like business area or functional area of the organisation. And it's less about thinking about, okay, what are the updates in digital? It's like, actually, what are the updates in fundraising? How's digital supporting that? And then, yeah, don't worry about not understanding every new platform that comes out. Like, I work in digital and I'm overwhelmed by it. So, yeah.
And anyone that says that they're not is lying.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think also there are lots of good spaces to learn. Like, this is a great space to learn, and Charity Digital's website's got so many articles. There's also Media Trust, who run lots of courses, which are really good for equipping you in those kind of skills.
Mm-hmm. Good. Thank you for that question. Down here, please.
You need to ask a nice question.
Oh, perhaps I should give the mic back then. Maybe a slightly controversial question, being that this is all about digital strategy. Isn't one of the challenges that of the barriers, you talked about barriers earlier, the fact that it's made into such a big thing in that it's got to be a digital strategy? Should it not be that what you're trying to actually do is to get everybody in the organisation to look at what is it you're doing and where is it that digital could and technology can help this work better? So, for example, the lady back there that was, you know, fundraising, actually, rather than, right, we need a whole digital strategy, well, I'm doing fundraising, what's there that's out there now that's going to make this easier, more cost effective, and help us to do the best that we can with what's available?
Yeah, I think it's about finding the right tool for the job. I think making sure you're going with it, what's the problem that we're trying to solve and what's the right solution. And, you know, I will be biased and say that often there is a good digital solution, but if there isn't, then hopefully you're working with partners who will be transparent with you about that. There's, you know, we have had lots of occasions where people come to us and said, oh, we need an app, and it's like, oh, no, you don't. You definitely don't do that. But yeah, I think it is finding the right tool for the job, and you know, we are going to be biased because we're talking about digital, but yeah, there are definitely occasions where digital should be part of the overall strategy and not kind of like, you know, sort of forced into it. But yeah, I think right tool for the job.
Yeah, I think I started writing a separate digital strategy and actually have scrapped that, and my digital strategy is now part of the main one. Mm-hmm. So exactly like you said, one of our foundations in our strategy is digital transformation. Mm-hmm. And so it has been built into the overall strategy of the organisation. So I think if you're in a space where that's the relationship you have with your senior leadership team and those who are driving that strategy, if you can get it in the main strategy, I think that's better, because I can, well, going for my budget, so I literally could be like, okay, you've asked me to deliver this, I cannot deliver that unless I have a budget to do something here. So I think it's, if you can incorporate it in the overall, it's much better.
Yeah, I totally underline that. So in the ideal world, we wouldn't ever talk about digital strategy. Mm. We'd just say there are great strategies that have appropriate digital content in them. But I guess from my perspective, we emphasise digital strategy because we're not yet in that position, so it's a way of reminding people that they should have that digital content within it. Mm. Let's go to another question. I thought I saw a hand somewhere. Yep, over there, near the back.
Just wondering, what does a good digital strategy look like? What are the core components and structures?
Well, I don't have one, so.
I'm happy to take this. Forgive me if everything I say sounds really basic, but when we work with like charities and help them run their digital strategy, actually a lot of the things we're telling them like aren't difficult and aren't hard, but they're just like, oh, I don't know why I haven't done that. So for us, when we think about what's a good digital strategy, like first one is that it's written down. And that people have access to it. Also, a good digital strategy is one that has been approved So whatever governance structures you're working with, whether that's approved by a digital board, whether it's approved by the senior leadership team, and most importantly, that yes, it's shared across the organisation. Those are the kind of like the key things that will apply to all organisations in this room, regardless of your size or which part of the charity sector that you sit in. And then what we always say is like, what's good is really dependent on your organisation. But yeah, if you follow those other steps, then that gives you a good foundation to springboard off.
I would say it's one that looks long-term as well. I think a lot of people will go, particularly in COVID, sort of went short-term and sort of went, okay, I have this budget to build this thing. Again, coming at it from a product perspective, but you know, you can build an app or a website or whatever it is. If you then don't have ongoing budget or capacity, so no team to run it, then it's going to die on the vine in the app store very quickly. It's going to become outdated very quickly. Users are going to look at that and go like, well, that's not anything that's up to date. So you can invest a load of money into something that then sort of becomes redundant very quickly. So you've got to have long-term commitment and budgets to it. And if you don't, then there are still options that you can do, but it's making sure that you match that to it. So not creating a strategy that involves, we can definitely do this as long as we have 10 people on it full time that we don't currently have, but maybe we will. Like, it's just kind of being really realistic with your capacity and your budgets, I think.
Okay, any more questions? Got time for one or two more, I think. Okay. At the back first, and then...
Have you got any strategies that would help maybe the more grey-haired trustees or team members who are not necessarily maybe holding the kind of purse strings, but not necessarily bought into the idea? Mm. And obviously you guys have delivered digital strategies, so what works to get them on board?
Yeah, that's a really great question, and actually very much reflected by our digital skills report that directly reflects that challenge. So who from my panel would like to answer that one?
Yeah, I'm happy to pick that one up. This is something that I feel, as someone who is a trustee that has the responsibility for digital, that works with the rest of my board are not very digital. I sometimes feel like quite isolated and really empathise with heads of digital or people that are leading digital change in charities, because I can also feel that. I was in an excellent session earlier that was looking at equity, diversity and inclusion, and I think that there's so many parallels when it comes to how you approach equity, diversity and inclusion within organisations and how you approach digital. And I think a really key thing is education, so like really trying to educate, to use your words, not mine, those kind of grey-haired trustees that require a bit of extra support, because what they themselves won't realise is that they are using digital and technology all of the time. They might not necessarily recognise it, but they are doing that. What they might recognise is the bits of digital and technology they use where they perceive some sort of loss. So what I hear a lot on my trustee board is, well, we deliver services to vulnerable young people. Surely digital means that we'll lose that personal touch. And they always think about the loss and the loss of those like human relationships. So yeah, it is really that education piece about the benefits, but also reassuring that loss that they're really worried about. It's like the self-service checkout sort of thing. It's like we're not going to be doing that. That's not the approach they're doing. It's yeah, really trying to bring them on that way.
Thanks. Mm. And last question here at the front.
My question's about vendors, and whether you have, anecdotes or tips for moving from conversations about the kinds of functions that we need or the things we want to achieve to actually selecting named technologies and vendors to get that done.
Who wants to take this?
Annie? I can start on it, yeah. I was just laughing because we were told not Excel sheets aren't the optimum, but for me, I'm just picturing the process I've done when I've been looking for a tool is that I like do a spreadsheet that has all of the different things and maps it all out. But I think and in that process, as I'm trying to figure out which tool is going to be the one, it's having conversations with people who are using it. So looking at students' union membership things, I've had so many conversations, so many demos, spoken to lots of people who have used the tools. And I think also within that, understanding the needs of my team to use that tool, because I might look at it and think it's fantastic, but actually it doesn't do one of the main functions of a team very well. So it can take a really long time to figure that out and do that. And I think, but I think also not being scared of almost making the wrong, not making the wrong decision on it, but like not scared of failure in terms of moving that process and having a conversation where you're like, oh, maybe that actual one isn't the right choice. We have moved down that, but we're going to go back and go this way. Because I think you can move, you can learn a lot through that process in terms of choosing them.
Yeah, I think for us we do, we'll have like a matrix of things that we're looking for, and we kind of do sort of technical investigations, whatever. We do try to manage people's expectations if there isn't going to be one thing that solves every single problem, because that's kind of, there's no silver bullets. So it's really about the prioritization of, okay, what is it that you actually need and what's the most important thing? Is it the cost effectiveness? Because we can get you something really cheap, but it might not do all the things that you want to do. And then if you're happy to spend a little bit more, it might get you some of this. But if we get something out of the box, it will be quick, but it might not necessarily be tailorable. Mm-hmm. You kind of have to go through and understand, I think, what the priorities are, and then kind of work from that and provide, I would say, for some people as much information as possible, but then for some people as little information as possible. You just sort of have to, again, know your stakeholder and make sure that you're giving them the information that they need to, if it's up to them to make the decision. Mm-hmm. And then if it's up to us to make the decision, then we kind of make sure that we've got a rationale behind it that we really believe. That's really important for us, the integrity. Mm.
Yeah, I think those are all like really, really great points. I think the only other one that I would add would be just making the making sure the relationship works. Mm-hmm. And there's a really, really good fit there. I think, you know, if you're looking for a technical partner, lots will exist. How many of those technical partners will understand your organisation, mm-hmm. especially within the charity sector? How many really understand the sector and your organisations and what you're trying to do, and can you work with them? I always try and advise charities in terms of like procurement processes and selecting partners. Like, can you do a chemistry meeting? Yeah. Mm. Can you do like little workshops or ways to like understand how you might work together? Because that is the most kind of important aspect of people coming together.
It makes such a difference, and I would say it does work both ways. Just
saying, like, absolutely.
Charities
yeah.
are great, but sometimes you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, making sure that you can work together is absolutely essential, because it just makes everything so, so painful, and then you kind of lose sight of the great thing that you're trying to achieve, and that's, you know, that can become really miserable. So I think chemistry meetings are kind of essential, definitely.
Sometimes it's like a gut instinct as well. You can't exactly articulate it, but it's like, I know I can work with with that person. And as somebody that's lost pitches and proposals to, we had better chemistry with the other supplier, like it's horrible, but ultimately at the end of the day the best decision's been made. So
especially when you thought the chemistry was great,
I know exactly. It's like, was it you? Was it me? So
right, I'm kind of conscious we're out of time now, and I think we've had some really brilliant questions and good discussions. I am going to ask for, I want a really short one sentence answer from each of you, if you're to give one thing, one recommendation for our charity audience to have a compelling and effective digital strategy. What would that one thing be, Annie?
I think, and I've heard this in lots of different sessions today, but figure out what makes people in your organisation tick, what is the thing in their job that really drives them, and then figure out how your tools are going to help them do that, so equipping them to be more effective.
I'm going to repeat myself because it's the end of the day. So lean on digital natives within your organisation. So just, they might not have digital, they might not be sort of on the board or anything, but lean on the people who don't have to go through a transformation because they've been born transformed, I guess.
Prioritise digital projects that will deliver benefits and value early and quickly. Mm. And when that happens, celebrate as a team.
Oh yeah, celebrate's a really good time.
Celebrate the wins. Yeah. It's so easy to keep plates spinning and keep looking forward, but absolutely look back and recognise when there has been a step change within your organisations.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, I want to thank my panel very much for their contributions today.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast and found this content helpful and would like to attend the 2023 Be More Digital Conference, you can purchase tickets through the charitydigital.org.uk website today.
We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.